The Guardian. Welcome back to Tech Weekly with me, Jemima Kish. This week, we dedicate the show to a discussion which took place at this year's Silicon Milk Roundabout Jobs Fair in London. It's a subject close to my heart, encouraging more women to join the tech industry, which is a contentious and sensitive issue, not least because women don't like being told what to do. We gathered a panel of the good and great from across the London tech scene, and here's how the debate unfolded.
Okay, thank you very much for coming along, everybody. You can move forward if you like. We don't bite and all that. I'm very pleased to see that it's not just women that are here, although it is mostly women at the front, actually, to be fair. If there are any men out there who are interested in a fair society, no, or making more money, we'll tell you how to make more money, because actually, according to the Harvard Business Review, companies who have women on the management board make 34% more return on their investment. So if that doesn't make you realise what an important issue this is, I don't know what will. A slightly more terrifying statistic is that although women are 49% of the workforce in the UK, only 17% of IT and telcos employees are women, which is shit, frankly. A little shout out here to Spotify, who have just introduced an equal paternity and maternity policy, which means that men can take 9 months off. And the reason that is important is because you need to be sending out the message that that men and women can take equal time to spend with their children. Because if only women can take 9 months off to look after their children, then only women will, and the men will go back to work. And that means women out of the employment cycle for longer. So if you're in a position in your startup to introduce that policy, I would urge you to do so. And 10 house points to Songkick for getting that started. So we have a fantastic panel here today. I'm going to ask everybody just to introduce who they are and where they're from.
I'm Rob from Makers Academy. We run a 10-week training course for web developers. And one of the things that we've seen very easily is that the proportion of male applicants of the course to female applicants is not great. And we're just trying to, I'm actually here more than anything else to try to figure out what we can do to try to appeal more to women. Like, how do we talk about the course? How do we get more women interested? And it's just, you know, that's why we're here. I'm here to listen more than anything else.
My name is Iris. I run a technology education movement called Apps for Good. I'm quite pleased to say that this year, out of the 6,000 students, we have 52% are girls.
Excellent.
So that I can explain later why that is, but I think there are certain reasons why we don't sell, even though it's a technical and a product course, we don't sell it as such.
I'm Robin. I'm the founder of Datch. We're a lesbian dating app, and at the moment have only female employees at the moment. And I also run something called Geek Girls, which is a community group of girls working in tech to get together.
My name is Jackson Hall. I'm the CTO at One Fine Stay. We operate an engineering team of about 25. It is co-ed. And I'm here mostly to share my experience about how products move through the life cycle with a team with both genders fully stacked.
Okay, so I think a really good place to start would be with Iris, who has had some success in encouraging women to do technology courses, technology education, and it is not, interestingly, by saying, hey, women, come and do some technology. It's a slightly different approach, isn't it?
Yes, I think that what we do with Apps for Good is we start with a problem young people are passionate about. So we say, pick something you find in your local community that annoys you, that you want to get fixed, you get fixed, or something that bothers you in your own lives. And then the technology comes in as a way to address that, and UX and programming and business models and all of that comes in afterwards. But because they have something they feel ownership for and they're passionate about, girls are actually pretty good in learning how to code, for example, because girls tend to be quite good in learning languages in general. But as I said, like, it has to be there has to be a reason and a purpose to do so.
This is very much about perception and, in a way, presentation of what technology is. I mean, technology isn't just sort of, technology is everything these days. It's in every industry. It's in our lives, sort of almost in every moment. And that means that there are skills and expertise required around every part of that. So this is about education, isn't it, as much as anything else?
Well, what we know is, like, so our age range is now 13 to 18-year-olds, but what we do know is that the core group we have is 13, 14, 15-year-olds. And that is when young people exclude careers. Doesn't mean they pick careers. So they say, I don't want to do X, Y, and Z. And more often than not, what's currently happening in the UK in schools, there are two different strands. One is around ICT. If you have any child who's currently in school and doing ICT, you'll know it's mind-bogglingly boring. there's another strand which is very much focused on computer science, but often computer science is taught in a very, very dull way as well. So it's very much about the coding, programming bit, but again, without seeing the full potential of why it matters to you and your own life.
Yeah.
So I think that's the key thing.
Yeah, so you can either do PowerPoint or PHP at school. So no wonder there's a lack of sort of understanding about how creative the tech industry is. Rob, how do you pitch your code education, code learning courses in such a way to try and appeal to women? And are you having any success with that?
Unfortunately, we're not having as much success as I'd hope we are. From the proportion of people that apply, we accept, I think, actually more females than we do males. It has nothing to do with bias. It's just that based on the interview process, we actually think they'd be more successful on the course. And the few females that have been on the course are all in the top half of the class. Like, they're all performing exceptionally well. We did a one day taster course about 6 weeks ago, and there was about a 50-50 split of male and female, and the female students excelled incredibly well. In terms of what we're trying to do to bring them on the course, it's difficult. We're trying to figure out, we're talking to the female students that do come on to try to determine what was it that actually brought you in. And it seems like the ones that have done it are just, they have a lot of confidence and they see it. And, you know, if you go to a tech event as a female, like, you do have to be confident because it's a large disparity.
Yeah, if you stand out, you have to be able to prove yourself just that little bit more. It's the Barack Obama syndrome, I think. Jackson, you have an interesting story about amazing women who are excelling at what they do.
Sure, yeah, before I shipped out to the UK, I was CTO at a business called Plum District in San Francisco. It's about 200 employees, 180 of which are women. And I will tell you that the single best engineer I ever hired was a woman who was trained in linguistics, had no formal training in software development or frankly any real technical training at all. So I think a lot of what you're saying about the perception people have of career choice is definitely palatable. I mean, there's and the exceptions to that are even more exemplary. So this woman came through, she was in education, I think, for years and years. And she proved to be the single best engineer I ever hired because that was really what she was fit for. So I think, my lesson from that was not just that there are strong women-led companies that have technical angles to them, there certainly are, but that it's never too late if you made the choice to do something else with your career, or even you made the choice to start a family, for example. You can always come back in and be an excellent engineer, product person, any number of roles in that development lifecycle.
Tell us about the company you used to work for, because the ratio of female engineers there was quite extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. So Plum District was founded, and part of its core was the empowerment of women. The product is for women with children mostly, who appreciate the product more so than men. We did have something like 10% of the user base was men. But for example, the executive team of six, five of them are women. I was the lone standout, I think.
How did that feel?
Well, it was. I can relate to you being at this event, frankly. I mean, it really puts in perspective what I think women trying to break into technical fields, engineering in particular, must feel. It was a bit of a flip-flop from where I'd been previously.
Have you worked anywhere where you've experienced, I suppose the more typical kind of male-dominated kind of environment where there's kind of a bit of that programmer thing going on and everyone's drawing dicks on stuff and, you know, it's all very, you know, in contrast to working for...
Just about everywhere else before that. Yeah, and I think part of that is there's, you know, the tide is changing a little bit, I think. More and more... Well, first off, let me say that the definition of an engineer is changing. I mean, in the early 2000s, even during the first dot-com boom, an engineer was a very, very specific thing with a prerequisite of a specific set of skills, typically, you know, learned through a college curriculum. More and more, an engineer means many, many things. And to go back to my example of the best engineer I ever hired, she was particularly good at communicating. It had nothing to do with you know, her skills at the keyboard, although she was particularly gifted therein.
Robin, tell us about your experience, because you're kind of an empowered woman, aren't you? You decided, you had an idea, and you said, I need to be able to code this, and you went out and learned how to do it. Tell us your story.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I think one of the biggest things. Starting teaching people in school is really important, but also it doesn't have to be there. Like, I completely changed careers in my early 20s, and the scariest thing about it was thinking, I have no idea. And it feels like this massive barrier, because you assume it's people sitting like building matrix grids or something that is something that you can't do. And I was lucky that some of my friends ran Decoded, and it felt like an easy way to get into it. But I think letting people know that there are really easy ways to start learning it, and it's a language, it's a way of communicating and problem solving, and that's the best thing to do. And it just takes time to learn it, and everyone can do that at any point in your career and change and do something different, and anyone can learn it. It's just spending the time and getting to know it. And so I did that. I then did a programming course. Don't do it full time for the app, because I would never be able to do that, but I'm trying to learn, and I go to groups like Ladies That Code and sit with other girls, and we all learn from each other. I go to tons of meetups and learn from other people. That's the best thing about startup, it's how much everyone helps you with everything that you want to learn and try to get better.
Well, it's an interesting point of contention about whether having sort of women in technology events and groups works, because, you know, I don't doubt the value of the people that do go to them, but it seems to be the same kind of women who are interested in these tend to go to the same kind of events, and actually I'm not sure how useful it is at attracting in new women. Speaking to Emma Mulqueeney, another amazing woman in technology who runs Rewired State, she has actively tried to bring more women into their hack events, and when she very aggressively set out on this hacking course I want you women to sign up for, the sign-up rate actually fell from 5 to 3%, because a lot of women perhaps are uncomfortable feeling that they're being targeted in a way. What's going on with the psychology of promoting directly to women? Why doesn't it always work? Anybody?
I think sometimes people are a bit cautious about going to the all-female stuff. Like, there's so much stuff happening about women in tech, and it sounds a bit like worthy sometimes of too much women-led stuff, and really it's about equality and across all the spectrum. And so I think sometimes you think, oh, I can't go to another women-focused event. And
maybe the ways to bring women are actually a bit more subtle, whether it's that kind of paternity leave parity at Songkick, or perhaps a slight kind of cultural accommodation in a way, you know, just being a little bit more family-friendly as well. And this is the next big issue. Once we've asserted that, yes, women are definitely valuable in the workplace and there are jobs for them, we can't talk about women and technology without talking about family life. And this isn't just about women and childcare, this is about the general lack of balance that we have in the tech sector between home life and work life. It's a massive issue for women that when you have a child and you have to prioritise them, it impacts on your work. Iris.
Yes, it does. It's like, I don't think there's an easy answer to that, because every time when you start a new enterprise, whether it is a tech startup or a non-profit or anything else, it means that you effectively work for probably 2 to 3 years really hard. I don't think there is an easy way around that, because you need to keep up with the hours to compensate for all the mistakes you make on the way. So I don't think running a startup and doing anything that has to do with work-life balance, whether that is looking after your parents or having children or having a really strong hobby or anything else is actually really suitable. So I think there is something where there is a specific commitment and there is a clear trade-off, which you can mediate a little bit, but it's always there.
So what kind of adjustments or policies could you introduce into all of your companies, perhaps, that would help not just men, but women look after their children more, and that would also help encourage women into the business because they wouldn't be the ones tied to childcare?
I think there's been something interesting we've learned. It's like, and it's actually independent from men or women. It's whether you have children or not. So the developer we have is like, he works part of the time from home, part of the time in the evening, so he can do the school run, etc. And he has three children. And the reason why he really enjoys working for us is because he has that flexibility. So I think it's like flexibility is one thing. And that is also that depends on the job. Some jobs lend themselves more easily than others. Mm. So, but it's like really playing around what needs to be done. I think for both men and women, because I think the other big shift that's happening right now is it's not only women focused on childcare. It's like there are as many men and who would want to spend more time if they could.
I have to say at this point that the only reason I was able to come is because they have a creche here, which my two kids are in now. So thank you very much again. Role models, I think, are massively important. I don't know if anyone saw the piece that Russell Brand wrote about Margaret Thatcher when he said, why do people keep saying that she broke the glass ceiling? Because she only broke it in such a way that the shards of falling glass rained down on all the women beneath her, which I thought was amazing because, yes, she was a woman, but she operated in a very male way and she didn't support and encourage and mentor other women, which is absolutely crucial. American former head of state Madeleine Albright said that there's a special place in hell reserved for women who don't help other women, which I think is quite brilliant. So role models then. I think it's very important that people who encourage and support and mentor women aren't just other women, and that generally we recognise that this is really important for the industry as a whole. Would anyone like to comment on male role models?
So this may be a bit tangential, but my wife worked at Yahoo for about 10 years. And the one thing that we noticed about when Marissa Mayer came in was, frankly, a lot of bad press about the decision that had been made to hire her, on the cusp of a couple of terrible decisions at CEO, right? And it really hit her pretty hard, I think, just constantly hearing nothing but, you know, what she hadn't done when she was at Google and why she was a misfit for this role. But I think you can look to somebody like Marissa Mayer and say, well, she definitely got through that. And if you're going to peg the value of what she's doing to the value of their stock price, well, she's doing pretty well, right? So I think in terms of role models, it's for me, I think when you're looking at a cultural shift, trying to get more women into the stream in the first place, it's really about pointing to women who have broken through, right, and have taken that that risk to their own, you know, to their own psyche, frankly, and come through the other side. Marissa Mayer is a great example.
Wanted to say that there will be some room for questions at the end if anyone might have questions or comments or just abuse. I don't know anything. Can we talk a bit about terminology? Because often there is kind of, I'm not going to go into the shrink it and pink it thing because my head might implode, but there is often terminology around getting women involved in things that calls us girls and calls us geeks. And the geek thing is kind of tribal and it works for some people, but I also think it puts a lot of other people, a lot of other women off, perhaps, you know, if you're a kind of, I don't know, an amazing product manager or a, you know, an incredibly creative games designer, you might not be comfortable with the geek thing. So being called girls and geeks might be one for you, Robin, but, it, you know, does that put...
geek girls, yeah.
This is about marketing and perception again, perhaps, but yeah. Does it put some women off?
There was an article about it the other day that was talking about, like, guys don't get called boys because it doesn't project the right image. They're called, like, lads or men, and is it sending the wrong message if you're, you know, calling yourself girls? Heidi, who started Geek Girls, created it because she wanted to meet other women working in tech in Stockholm, and she just didn't meet enough women. So it was like, cool, let's meet up. And it was a name that they all chose to use because they were like, yeah, cool, that's what we do. And I think they were confident knowing what their role was. And so we're like, yeah, cool, we own that. That's our tribe. Like, we're Geek Girls. We love it. And that's what Geek Girls is about now. It's just girls or anyone else who is into the Geek Girl community comes together for it. I think, maybe it's getting a bit precious about it. I know there's reasons to promote the right kind of message, but I think we get together because we want to, and the name is like a thing that we own now. And it's we feel proud of that, and it doesn't demean anyone. And it seems like an accessible way. I don't think it stopped anyone meeting up with us. It kind of feels more accessible to women rather than blocking people out.
Fair enough.
I was just going to say, I mean, I've never run across a group saying, you know, like men in engineering or, you know, lads for Lua or something. It just doesn't exist, right? And I think I would just say that what's worked personally better for me in my job, actually, to try to recruit a diverse set of skills in a team is to talk not about who the people I'm hiring, but what they and we are all trying to accomplish. It's changing the tenor of, thank you very much. it's changing the tenor of things. And, I think where people want to associate themselves in their, in their personal lives is frankly their own choice. But for me, it's about a team of people coming together to solve a problem, irrespective of gender or skill set or experience level.
I'd have to agree with that a lot. I mean, if you're talking about we want to look at the product at the back of it instead of just talking about stereotypes or whatever you want to talk about, I mean, it's a perception issue. I mean, it's all perception all the way that we've gone through this. And the product at the back of this is that we realize there is a problem and that if we can fix the problem, everybody's better off. I mean, there's a plethora of research that shows that mixed gender teams are much more innovative. I spent 8 years in the military. I can tell you that all males put in a room and trying to think about solving a problem aren't going to be able to solve that problem as well as if you add a few females to the mix. I mean, it's just, it's really difficult. And I actually have I'm not really sure how to state it, but at Makers Academy, when we analyze people coming in, we realize that there's two groups of people. There's one group called an entity learner, and there's another group called a learning theorist. The entity learner, when we ask them when they failed at something, we say, you know, why do you think that you failed at that? And they'll say, well, I'm not good at that particular thing. They've basically been conditioned throughout their life to say, I'm not good at this thing. The other group says, I failed at that because I took a poor process, a poor attack. And if I changed the way I would have attacked that problem, it likely would have had a different result. And the people that are entity theorists usually don't become great coders because everybody's going to hit a wall at some point. And they're going to say, and shut down and say, well, I guess I'm not good at this. The other people say, I guess I have to take a different approach. The interesting thing we've noticed is that the vast majority of females that end up coming into the course aren't entity theorists. They're process people. But we have about a 50-50 mix with males. So I don't know if it's that our marketing are bringing those types of females in or if there's a disposition between male and female. I honestly don't know. But I mean, it's purely a marketing effort almost. We have to figure out how to change the perception.
See, this is really fascinating, and this is what comes down to the point I mentioned first, which is that more women on your team make better products. So anyone with any anecdotes on, you know, how the dynamics of a mixed gender team produce better stuff, that would be very useful to hear. Yes? Yeah, just for the people that can't hear what this lady was saying, she's just basically saying that there's perhaps a gap in quality to paraphrase, if this is okay, a gap in quality between education and what it's actually, not even quality, but, you know, a gap in kind of what is happening in real world technology, and women also tending to be pushed into the management side of roles rather than engineering. And I have heard anecdotes of women who went for engineering jobs, even at Google, who should know better, and they said to her, are you sure you're not interested in the product manager roles? Which is surprising. Take it with a pinch of salt because it's an anecdote, but there you go. I was
going to say that's the harder job, by the way, yeah. The product manager side.
Yeah, there's a lady waving at the back there, Kathy. Yes. Yeah.
Hi, could I have your advice, please? I'm going to start working for a mobile marketing agency which is full of men, and as soon as I walked in there, it really freaked me out. And I'm just used to being around a lot of females, so this is really broad, you don't really know the people, but have you got any like general tips on how to work in a very male-dominated place. And there's a lot of like developers there as well. I don't know if that makes any difference.
I think there are quite a few things people don't even notice that might bother you. So I remember when I was pregnant and I went to sort of developer meetups, there was only beer and pizza there, and I couldn't drink alcohol. And no one noticed that that might be an issue. So I think it's up to you. If you want to stay in that place, is to articulate what actually bothers you, because you can't assume that other people will notice it. But it might very well happen that it does bother some of the men as well. If there's specific things, as I said, like it really depends. It's like if you feel there's certain communication styles or certain ways how things are being organized or communicated or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a good point. At the end, I think we'll all sort of come up with a few points that we think might sort of help move this issue on in various ways, that this issue being we need more women in technology. But there's a lady at the front with a...
Following on from what that lady was saying, I've always almost been the only woman in all the places I've worked, and I work in digital. And often I think what she was saying was quite pertinent, because I always find that the women are pushed into the kind of admin, PA, digital type areas. And then when there's a female kind of developer or programmer, it's a bit like, oh, okay, that's a bit of a novelty, and it's not really kind of taken as seriously. I think... I'd quite like to know what's the best way of getting to young people in schools and colleges and telling young women how that's it's a viable career, as opposed to, you know, being the next kind of Kim Kardashian or the next reality star, how to kind of make technology attractive to them without kind of, but also kind of saying to them, this is equally as viable as any other career, and you don't have to limit yourself to what the media says is a sexy
career.
Yeah,
I have a lot of friends who are teachers, and the number who come to me and say that there are so many young girls who just want to be a wag or something. Anyway, and that's another, it's for another meeting. So let's try and formulate some kind of practical advice and almost challenges that we could sort of set ourselves. I've got a few to kick it off. One is that, to go back to the lady who's about to go into a very male working environment, bear in mind I work at The Guardian and that's about as right on as you can get. But anyway, I think when somebody says something that is, you know, mildly offensive or really offensive or just really shit, just call them out on it. I was at a dinner the other night with loads of entrepreneurs in Stockholm, all blokes. So the first thing I said was, do you not have any women in Sweden? Because they apparently couldn't find one to come along, apart from the waitress. And then they were talking, someone just made some shit joke around the table, and I just went, easy, you know. So just pull them up on it so they know it's not appropriate to make those kind of crap jokes. Another one is, if there are women doing really cool work, then celebrate it. You know, even if you just say to them, that was really good. It really counts. And big them up on Twitter. I'm really uncomfortable with generalizations about gender or anything else, but I do think women are less good at promoting themselves, especially in technology. And another thing is that my high school has just gone into special measures, and so I've just decided I'm going to go back and do a talk, and I'm going to say, is there anyone interested in computer science? And that will be boys. And then I'll go and say, you know, are there any... is there anyone who's, you know, designing their own blogs and loves Facebook and, you know, has a lot of ideas for videos online and, you know, loves art? And that will be the girls. And then I'll bring them in and I'll give them a talk about what's going on in the tech space. So go back to your schools and spread the word. Okay, Robin.
I'd
make
like
some pledges.
With these ladies, it's like, yeah, for us, and what we're trying to do at Geek Girls is more university-led stuff. So we just ran a conference in Oxford and went to the undergrads and just started explaining to people what it was like working in a startup and how it actually exists as a career, and it's not just programming, like the whole environment and the community.
Amazing.
Of it, and taking it around to other universities. It was brilliant. It was really like enjoyable, like loads of people got really involved with it. It was fantastic, so we want to take it out to other places.
Jackson.
Well, not to get too philosophical, but Nichiren Daishonin says, you know, be what you want the world to be. And I think probably about 5 years ago, when I had my first child, who's my daughter, my worldview changed a little bit. And I think a lot of it is just being conscious of your own perspectives of how things should be, you know, responsive to the way you were trained or the patterns that you fell into previously. And by the way, that doesn't just apply to gender. I mean, it applies to a whole smattering of things. So I think it's about self-consciousness as well.
Good answer. Iris.
I think just try and push back and fail, but take the risk of failing. I think, so like what I see is like a lot of the girls I mentor, they're afraid of failing and trying in the first place. And most boys don't have that fear of failure as much as the girls have. So I think that's one of the things. The other things in terms of giving back is like we have hundreds of people who volunteer through our system and give advice. And it's like if you want to be a role model, there's a really easy way to do it. So it's no excuse not doing it.
And Rob?
I think it's all been said already. It's perception and confidence. And it's not even gender specific. Men, women, anybody. I mean, believe in yourself. I mean, there's when we do customer development with different companies that are looking to hire coders, we ask them what they're looking for. And it's not always, oh, we really, really want somebody who's an expert at Ruby or who's had 5 years experience. A lot of the times, the vast majority of the time, it's like, we need more female engineers. And a lot of people aren't doing it because they just don't believe in it and just believe in yourself, yeah.
Yeah, and in the words of Leah Culver, who's an amazing developer in the Valley, women, you've just got to pimp your shit. So with those charming parting words, thank you very much. So go out and, you know, go forth and prosper.
Many thanks for listening. And for links to all the organisations mentioned in the discussion, just go to our blog, guardian.co.uk/techweekly. But from me, Jemima Kish, and Tech Weekly producer Jason Phipps, it's goodbye for now. For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.